There's a degree of intrigue in the parasha. There's actually a couple of things of intrigue, but I want to focus on the relationship between Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. And let's take a look at Perek Kaf Tet, Pasuk Tet Zayin, which you have in source number one. Ulavan Shtei Vanot, and Lavan had two daughters, Shem HaGdola Leah, the name of the older one was Leah, the Shem HaKtana Rachel, and the name of the younger one was Rachel. Of course, there are those who will claim that they were in fact twins, and I said there are those who will claim this. And you could support that by saying that just like Yaakov and Esav are referred to by their mother as the older son and the younger son, even though they're twins and maybe minutes between the two, so you could claim a similar relationship here. V'enei Leah Rakot. Okay, V'enei Leah Rakot. What does Rakot mean? Her eyes were soft. Which
some say weak, some say beautifully soft, and some say a lot of other things.
Well, what do we say the word actually means? It means soft, which does not necessarily sound bad at all when seen on itself, but the question will be more when we see the comparison. Rachel haita yifat toar v'yifat mar'eh. And Rachel was beautiful. Now, that actually has a lack of symmetry between the two of them, so therefore it leaves us with a question mark. V'yahav Yaakov et Rachel, and then Yaakov loves Rachel, and that leads to another question. Does his loving Rachel have anything to do with her looks? Or is this something which is independent? Because that's what we were just now told immediately before. But Yomer and Yaakov says, Evadcha sheba shanim b'Rachel bitcha haktana. And Yaakov says to Lavan, I will work for you for 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter, your smaller daughter. Of course, it's pointed out that he's very, very specific, so that he won't get ripped off later on. But I guess Rachel b'tcha haktana becomes almost a euphemism for the small letters on the contract, but it did not seem to help him very much. Now, why Yaakov is making this offer is itself interesting. When the servant of Avraham came, and you know that's obviously going to be the contrast or the comparison, when the servant of Avram came, he came with a great deal of wealth, and they made a deal, and then the next thing you know, he took Rivka back for Yitzchak. But over here, instead, we find Yaakov working for 7 years. Now, why this is the case, I'm just going to leave it as a question now. The Ibn Ezra has a theory which drives the Ramban absolutely crazy, so you could look it up. The Ibn Ezra says it back on the Pasuk, Vayivez Esav et ha-Bechora, that Esav detested the Bechora. Ibn Ezra claims that Yitzchak has lost all of his money, and the family is destitute, and there's no money whatsoever, and that's why when Yaakov leaves, he doesn't have any money, and all that he asks for is clothing, and he has a rock to sleep on, and now when he gets there, if you compare when the Eved of Avram went, he went with all of this wealth, and now for the dowry over here, there's absolutely nothing. So therefore, that's the Ibn Ezra's theory. As I said, the Ramban does not like this whatsoever. But Yaakov over here may be making an offer that he did not necessarily have to make. But he's, again, if anything, Yaakov is being, as we would say in Israel, beseder, even perhaps super beseder, and he's it's funny because Yaakov wants to be proper. He wants to do the right thing. Again, this could be manifested by the Rachel, Bitak, Tana, and right, he wants to say the exact thing, and he wants to do the right thing. Of course, none of this helps him. So let's continue. The Yomad Lavan, Tov Tite Ota Lach, Mitite Ota Leish Acher, Shabai Madi. Well, we're going to have to give her to somebody, better you than someone else, which is absolutely an absurd response, but Lavan is not necessarily somebody that we easily understand. Vayavod Yaakov b'Rachel sheva shanim. Yaakov worked for Rachel for 7 years. Vayu beinav ki yamim achadim v'avoto ota. And it was like days because of his love for her. Which, by the way, is also a little funny, because you would say if he loves her so much, then 7 years could have felt like 70 years. Right? Well, right? That so it's also interesting. So it must be that even though this was hard work and long walk, and but he was so motivated, and therefore the time flies by. But as I said, there's something counter.
Into he had 7 years to see what she looked like. Which how did he get fooled the next day?
We're going to get to that. We didn't get to that. Unless you follow what I'll label the Frum Mefarshim, who said that during those 7 years they never actually spoke. So there are those who make this claim. They never spoke during the 7 years. They were kept completely separate. I mean, you do have to admit it's a little funny, considering when they meet for the first time, he kisses her right away. So he kisses, but he never heard her voice. So... Yes, funny things happen by wells. I don't know. But Yomer Yaakov el Lavan, after the 7 years, Hava et Ishti kamalu yamai vavo aleha. Yaakov says to Lavan, bring me my wife because the time has been fulfilled, and let me have relations with her. Which actually the commentaries also go crazy on that. Because, you know, that's not a very nice way to speak, and how could it be that Yaakov is speaking this way? So, of course, it will be interpreted that it really means the holiest possible intentions. I mean, if you want to understand how you can turn that to holy possible intentions, that Yaakov understands that Klal Yisrael has to come into existence, and Yaakov is there waiting. It's all for the purpose of Klal Yisrael and nothing else. But as I said, it's... The language of Lavan is strange, and the language of Yaakov is strange, and I hope you appreciate that. I'm not going to solve that. I'm just pointing this out. I'll leave you to solve this. You can bring this up.
Yaakov is talking in language to Lavan can understand.
As I said, you can bring this up Friday night by your Shabbos table, and you could then give. You can give interpretations that you like. Continue. V'yeesof Lavan et kol anshei hamakom, Lavan gathered all the people of the place, v'yas mishteh, and he made a party. Lavan actually is somebody who seems to like parties. Later on, when Yaakov runs away, he says, why didn't you let me know you were going? I would have made a party. So it seems to be that Lavan is somebody who likes parties. So that you could ask for a night. Who in the parsha likes parties? Lavan likes parties. V'yi be'erev, and in the evening, v'yikach et Leah bito, and the evening came, and he pulled a fast one, and he switched Leah, his daughter, for Rachel, and Yaakov ended up being intimate with Leah. But yiten Lavan la et Zilpa shivchato l'Leah bito shivcha, and he gave Zilpa. So it's actually the Midrashim over here also point out that it's likely that Zilpa was actually Rachel's. I know that later on you think it's the other way around, that Zilpah was actually Rachel's servant, and therefore in order to make to give the misinformation over there, there's a lot of misinformation going on here. And in order to make the misinformation complete, he gives Zilpah to Leah, so Yaakov will again think that it's Rachel. But Yiva Boker, Binehi Leah. And the morning came, and behold, it was Leah. What did you do to me? I worked for Rachel. Why did you deceive me? This is not done in our place to give the younger one before the old one. Malay Shavuazot. Finish the week. Finish the week. This is one of the sources for Sheva Brachot, 7 days. And then I'll give you her for another 7 years of work, which again makes it sound... And it's interesting, because at that point Yaakov could have or should have said to Lavan, you know, what are you talking about? It's also not clear if the Shavua over here means the 7 days or it means the 7 years. Because if you look back, that for Yaakov it said that he works those 7 years, and the 7 years were like? were like days. So now he says, finish the, you know, these 7 days. So another 7 days. So is it that he was given Rachel after just 7 days, or he did wait another 7 years? Okay, let's stop over here. The first thing that we should notice is that the whole narrative has a similarity to a previous scene that we saw not that far before this, and that is the whole confusion between Yaakov and Leah, and Yaakov and Esav, and how Yaakov replaces Esav. And basically, all that I'm doing right now is asking you to read the Chumash as you were to read literature, which is not a bad thing. I mean, some of you can claim it's not a good thing, but it's not a bad thing. It's that sometimes we read the Chumash and we get so caught up in religious messages or meaning, or we get micro-connected to words or verses that we miss the larger picture. And the larger picture over here is, you could say that there, again, depending on how you want to label it, you can say there's irony over here when you compare the two. You can say that Yaakov had it coming to him, and that this is what you would call quid pro quo, that, you know, who are you, you know, to speak about trying to fool somebody? I mean, you yourself did the same thing. And therefore, you know, to what extent these two parshiot are connected, and how they're connected, if it's a punishment, I guess if you were not religiously inclined, you would call it karma. But we are religiously inclined, but we do want to understand a little bit more about the connection. And maybe even on a deeper level, there are other questions that really do gnaw at us. One question is, okay, if Am Yisrael is going to emerge from all this, so why was it necessary for Am Yisrael to emerge out of deceit? That becomes a major question. I'm going to say that on two levels. Why was it necessary for Am Yisrael to come out of the deceit, and the deceit of Leah fooling Yaakov? Because again, you know, you talk about certain things you can do that could negatively impact the relationship. How exactly is Yaakov supposed to speak to Rachel afterwards? Like, what did you do? I mean, did you have a part in this? You know, there's a conspiracy here. Secondly, what's his relationship with Leah going to be subsequently? I mean, here's somebody who went and basically, you know, fooled him into marriage. I mean, in the worst possible sense. But then I can answer, so why is it necessary for Klai Shul to emerge out of this? And I hope you appreciate that we could have asked the exact same question in last week's parsha. Why was it necessary for Yaakov to get these brachot, and for these brachot to emerge out of a type of a deceit? And the same thing you can say about other things in last week's parsha. So again, I'm just putting all that on the table right now, and that's part of what we're going to keep in mind. The Radak quotes a midrash. I'm just mentioning this because you can end up drawing what I think is the absolutely wrong conclusion from all this, which is what the Radak, again, I don't want to say it's the wrong conclusion, but it's very interesting how this is his conclusion. Vayihi ba'erev, because there are midrashim that will tell you the opposite of what I'm about to read. Vayihi ba'erev, right, what happens in the evening? Hodi anu b'sipur hazeh, what's the conclusion? She'ein ra'ui ladam l'shamesh mitato l'or haner, kol shkein l'or hayom. So the Radak is bothered by something. What's he bothered by? He's bothered by, so how is it possible that Yaakov did not know that it was Leah until the morning? So he says, what conclusion can you draw from this? That when people have relations, it should be absolutely dark and they should not speak at all. That's the conclusion. So now, whether that is a normative halachic conclusion or not, I will leave at this point. But it's actually very interesting that that's what he draws as the conclusion, when the Midrash actually tells us that this was not his idea whatsoever, as we'll see, hopefully, when we continue. But it's interesting because the Midrash is trying to explain something, and what is it? It's trying to explain, well, again, the Midrash that the Radak is quoting, it's trying to explain why he could not see that it was not Rachel. Again, Rachel is beautiful, and Leah has soft eyes. So that means if he would see them, he should be able to tell the difference. Unless, of course, you want to tell me that every bride on her wedding day is glowing and is beautiful. And is that true or is that not true? It is true.
We're coming up with a big
what, it is true that every bride is beautiful?
Yes?
I once got a phone call. This must have been 25 years ago. I get a phone call, and somebody, I hear an elderly gentleman on the phone, and he says, "Kavod Harav." So I knew right away it was somebody who didn't know me, right? And I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Are you busy on Lag BaOmer?" So I say, "No." What do you mean? He goes, "Oh, I know rabbis are very busy on Lag BaOmer. Lots of weddings on Lag BaOmer. My daughter's getting Lag BaOmer. By the way, it was around 10 days or 2 weeks before Lag BaOmer at the time." And he says, "Can you perform the wedding?" So I said, "Seder, you know, v'simcha." He goes, "We're making a very small wedding in our backyard, and but around 2 weeks later, we'll be making a big bris."
Okay.
A big bris. Yeah, we already have the hall set for the bris and whatever. So, by the way, it turned out, it was a very interesting fellow. I got to know him afterwards a bit. It turned out he used to work for one of Israel's secret agencies. And his daughter, who was already close to 40 years old then, I can't even say this, I performed the wedding of somebody who's 65 today, right? So, but she was around 40 or so, and she convinced a friend of hers to get her pregnant. And no strings attached, she wanted to have a baby. And the friend stupidly agreed. Why say stupidly? Because you don't get pregnant, a daughter of somebody who's a high-ranking member of the Shabak. Next thing you know, he calls this guy over and calls him in for questioning and says, "What did you do to my daughter?" And arranged that there would indeed be a wedding. So anyway, I don't know.
With the same guy.
Yeah, so performing a wedding of a woman who's 9 months pregnant and... okay, fine. I just wanted to establish that. Not every time... I don't know. It's just a little hard to say sometimes Kala na v'chasuda when she's that pregnant. Anyway.
Sometimes taking the mother...
Okay, I'm not even going there. No. Okay. So anyway.
You performed the wedding.
Yeah. I had another case like this once, but it was a little. But this was the only time I tried to talk someone out of getting married, because there was a girl who was pregnant by a guy, but she had a different boyfriend, and they were just getting married so that the baby could be born in wedlock, and so he could take responsibility for his child. But he had absolute intention to divorce her afterwards. So I thought that this was not the best circumstances to perform a wedding. Anyway, let's get back to Rachel and Leah, because it's exciting enough. You don't need my stories, right? So it's interesting that according to the Radak, again, what bothers the Radak that he had to come and tell us this? What bothered him? What bothered him is that he doesn't recognize the difference. So you say, how could it be he doesn't recognize the difference? What's the answer? The answer is it's dark. He doesn't recognize the voice. What must be the answer? That she didn't speak. So now you can explain it. Now it's interesting, if we read carefully, again, what did I tell you we need to do? We need to go back and to compare it to what happened with Yaakov and Esav. But Yom Yaakov, source 3, Perikov Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph. But Yom Yaakov El Rivka Imo. Okay, this is after Rivka tells, and I do have to add this into the story as well, because when you think about it, the idea of being switched, right, Yaakov for Esav, is the idea of Rivka. It's not Yaakov's idea. The idea of Leah being switched is Laban's idea. It's not Leah's idea. So again, there is this further level of comparison. And of course, ultimately, what I want to get to today is the fact that that Rivka and Laban are siblings, and maybe there is much more in common right over there than we would normally think about. But that's I'm already giving you all the answers today. But that's what we're going to eventually get to now. Now, when the difference between the two sections is that we do see clearly in this week's parasha that it was Lavan's idea. Do we see that? But Yikachet Leavito, right? He does this. He actively does this. Over here, but we don't hear the conversation. We don't hear Leah saying, "Hold it. What if he recognizes me? Hold it. What?" Right? But we do hear that by Yaakov, and we have the conversation between Yaakov and Rivka, something we're lacking in the conversation between Lavan and Leah. Are we clear? Yes. So what are Yaakov's concerns? But Yom Yaakov of Rivka Imo, Hin Esav Achi Ish Sa'ir, Vanochi Ish Chalak. Ulayi Musheni Avi, V'hayiti ve'inav kimetateya v'aveiti like l'lov v'lo bracha. Now, why is this what bothers him? And not just that Yitzchak is going to look and recognize him, for the obvious reason that Yitzchak is blind. So therefore, he's not worried that Yitzchak is going to look and see the difference. Over here, we have darkness as our aid, you know, to take the place of Yitzchak's blindness. But his only thing that he worries about is that he may feel his skin and ace of his hairier. Retoma lo imo alai kilatcha bni afshma b'koli v'leich kachle. Now, what is Yaakov not concerned about?
The justice of the
whole
practice.
Well, hold on to, before we get to big moral issues, what is Yaakov not concerned about? The voice. He's not concerned about the voice. Now later on, of course, that's going to become the key line of Kolkol Yaakov Idan Yesa. But it's very interesting that Yaakov's objection over here is not that my father's going to recognize my voice. His objection instead is that my father will discern the difference between our physical appearance, but not that the voice will give it away. Of course, later on, when Yaakov comes in source 4, Perkazayim Pasuk Chet, V'yavol Aviv, V'yom Aviv, V'yom Ineni Miata Bini, V'yom Yaakov El Aviv, Anochi Esav Bechorecha, Asiti Kasher Dibarta, Elai Kumna, Shva V'achla Mitzedi, V'avur Tvarchani Nafshecha. Now, he says something over here which causes Yitzchak to question. He says, I am Esav, your firstborn. I've done as you asked. Please sit up and eat from the hunt which I've prepared for you so you can bless my soul. Rayomi Yitzchak El Beno, Yitzchak says to his son, and it's interesting, he says to his son as if there's a question as to which son he's speaking to, because it doesn't say, or maybe that's the best way of writing, but I will leave that as a question. How did you do this so quickly? Lord, your God has provided this for me. At this point, Yitzchak questions. And at this point, he's questioning. So, now, what has caused him to question? Now, when he says "Hakol Kol Yaakov," what is it which bothering him? So, Rashi, and I think that Rashi is making an excellent point. Kol Yaakov, shemidaber b'lashon tachlunim. Hakol Kol Yaakov has nothing to do with the pitch of voice, the tone, right, the pitch, the voice itself, but rather Hakol Kol Yaakov has to do with the content of what is said. Is that whoever is speaking in a very polite way, in a very dignified way. You can compare this later on if you want to. When Esav comes in, how Esav speaks to Yitzchak, it's much more gruff. There's no mention of God. It's actually the mention of God over here, which gets Yitzchak to say, come closer, I want to feel you. Which means the voices is not what concerns Yaakov initially, and it's the voice which does not seem to be the problem over here. The Rashbam says it even clearer for us. Hakol kol Yaakov, lefisha te'umim hayu, they were twins. Haya kolan damot, tzad zelazeh, ulekach ta Yitzchak bekolo. They're twins. You know, as much as you don't want to think about it, they were twins. They were not just brothers, they were twins. They shared a womb. And there is probably far more similarity between the two than we would normally anticipate.
There is a point, though, a big difference between identical and not identical twins. Even identical twins have differences. I know we have them found it.
Yeah.
But they don't always... they're not always apparent at the beginning. It takes time to find them, and they do exist. But with non-identical twins, it's no more than two brothers or two whatever.
Correct. Somebody try to convince me that there's a third example, third possibility, identical, non-identical, but there's a third identity where somehow they share... They share one egg, but it's two different... I don't know exactly how that works, but somebody try to convince me on this. I did not check this out to see.
In the case of Yaakov and Esav, there's no reason to assume that they were really, really similar, but they were not.
Correct. By the way, the Beis Halevi is a great interpretation. If you didn't hear it last week, nobody said this to you, I'll say it won't help you any because it'll be a whole year before you can use it next time. But, I mean, if somebody said this to me today, I would say that they obviously watched too much television as a kid. Most likely something like Get Smart or something. But listen to what he writes. Source 7. The Beis Halevi writes, back on that pasuk of Koko Yaakov. Koko Yaakov idami de Esa. Lo hikiru v'yavreichoto. L'chori yesh lavin kevin da hakarash al hakol hoya neged hakarash al yadayim. B'mai hichriya shu Esa u'berchu. He basically says, in terms of rules of logic over here, I have contradictory information. The voice is Yaakov, the hands is Esa. So at this point, it's one against one. Why continue? Right. But by the way, I just... We've spoken about this in the past, that there's two possibilities of reading the verse, Akolku Yaakov Deni Esav, right? The voice is the voice of Yaakov, the hands are Esav. One way of reading it is that the verse ends with a question mark. Of course, the Torah itself doesn't have these marks at all, but it ends with a question mark. If it ends with a question mark, then the Beit HaLevi's question is very apt. So why is he continuing? The other possibility is it's not a question mark, but rather it's an exclamation point, which I think is far more likely. If you want, I can explain it, but I think it's far more likely in light of the question of the Beit HaLevi. If there's contradictory information, so why continue? The lule de mistafina, which by the way is a great phrase, you should keep this phrase, practice it. Lule de mistafina means, had I not been afraid to say something, lule de mistafina, had I not been afraid, Hoya'ef Shalomar, it's possible to say. So you see, he's hesitating a little bit before he says what he wants to say. Yitzchak is really working very hard to see if it's Esav or not. Mita'elto, and still he gets fooled. Esav was afraid of this. Siman. He went and he gave him a sign. By the way, this now, Beit HaLevi, goes back to what a lot of us know about Rachel and Leah, that there was a sign between them. Ever hear that there was a sign? Anybody know what the sign was? Okay, if you're nice, maybe I'll tell you the various opinions what the sign was. But over here, it's now saying, okay, so Esav was afraid that Yaakov would do this. By the way, why should Esav be afraid? Because Yaakov already once showed his interest in taking something which Esav felt was his, the birthright. So therefore it says that he gives them a sign. Now the sign is what's completely brilliant. Sheyodeshu Esav, Sheyishane Kolo Kikolo Shel Yaakov. That the sign is that Esav was going to speak like Yaakov. Uldaber benachat ki Yaakov. And speak calmly and nicely like Yaakov. Ulaskir Shem Shemayim and say God, just like Yaakov. Vizeh siman shehu Esav. And that will be the sign that he's Esav. The im yabo Yaakov latot, because if Yaakov's going to come and imitate Esav, hari mistama yishana et kolo, shindamak kolo shal Esav. Because if Yaakov's going to come and imitate Esav, he's going to come and talk like Esav. One second, is this completely brilliant? What?
This is
their song. So he says, so what happens? And then we skip two lines. He says, V'yesh lomar. Oh, the Yaakov b'sichlo, he vingam et asod hazeh. Yaakov was smart and he understood this. U'mishimachi lo shina kol over the berkidarko. So basically, he has Yaakov speaking like Esav, imitating Yaakov.
Sounds like a spy movie.
I said, it's But at the end of the day, we really left it with the same point. And that is that, okay, they perhaps have the same voice, but they speak very differently. So therefore, Yaakov is not concerned at all about the voice being different, so then I can go the same thing again. And even go back to your point, how many of you, if, you know...
But also, Esav didn't give him the sign when he came.
He did. He spoke...
Esav was gruff.
Later on, yeah. As I said, the Beit HaLevi then would have to claim that when Esav comes in himself, then he must have forgotten about the sign that he's supposed to give, and that ruins everything. Correct. The Beit HaLevi, it's interesting.
You know that brothers can have very
and brothers can have similar voices, right?
Yeah, and you
right.
I didn't know it was called.
Then how do you, at which point do you figure out in the conversation?
When they start to talk, they don't know that they're
Who is this? So if I just say your favorite son, you'll know who it is? Yes, because I'm the only one who will say that. Okay, okay. There you go. Yes.
Rashi uses the word tachanun, name, which is a pleading or requesting. What does that say about what he's saying or how he's speaking?
He means it more... The translation of tachanun would more be one of... it's almost like a prayer, speaking in a what he means is in a nicer way, not in a demanding way. Not coming into, you know, this is what you should do, which Asaph really does come in afterwards. He's much more gruff, and he comes in. Okay, let us continue. Let's skip 8 for now, because I don't remember why I put it there, and let's go to 9. 9 is in a Medrash. Nine is in a medrash in what's called the Sechel Tov. Vayehi baboker v'hinehi Leah. The morning turns out that it was Leah. And here we're going to see the medrash identifying exactly what I've been pointing at from the beginning. Kol makom shata motzeh v'hineh eino elo b'lashon inyan hafuch k'inyan v'hineh chalom v'chol k'piyot v'chein kan kol alayla kara Rachel v'hi yona. But Boker Safaba, he looks at her, Vinehi Leah. Amar Ra, Ramait Bat Ramai. You are a deceiver, the daughter of a deceiver. Lama Asitkach, why would you do such a thing? So again, here we have the conversation that we were actually very intrigued about. What does Yaakov say to Leah afterwards? Amar Lo, Velo Kach Asiti LaAvicha, you didn't do the exact same thing to your father. He calls Esav and you answer. So here we find the Medrash, you know, again, comparing the two sections and actually saying, on a moral level, what gives you the right to open your mouth and what gives you the right to complain? That itself is interesting. If you look at source number 10.
This is the old business that Leah wanted this.
We don't know her motivation. Again,
no, because at the minute she says no, she tells him, "I'm not."
We don't know her. We don't know her motivation. We don't know her motivation. But again, I'm going to point out. And what was Yaakov's motivation? He wanted it, or his mother told him to do it. Which means, you know, with Yaakov, we have a very interesting issue. We know Yaakov doesn't seem to be enthusiastically participating in this. He seems to be hesitating, he seems to be afraid, and basically he's in an impossible situation. His mother tells him to do something, it's not going to be respectful for his father. His mother tells him he has to do it, so he goes ahead and does it. So why are you willing to pick on Leah more when she's basically in the exact same moral quandary? Her father tells her to do something, so she's respecting her father. Again, I'm just pointing out that this issue of the mother and the father being involved in this just heightens the issue. It's not just... one gets confused in terms of identity, or identity switch. It's actually the identity switch which is instigated by the parent, which then puts the child in basically an impossible situation. The fact that the Midrash now connected the two, I think, is, again, is interesting.
No, I would say that it's clear from Shat when that one says, oh, we're going to put the younger one before the older one. It's almost like he's like saying something that's like sly, that he's like implying that he knows what Yaakov's been through. So I think you just see basis for Shat, and you go in the trash.
Yeah, when he says we don't do this in our place,
right.
In our place,
right.
In Komenu, implying that
yeah.
Maybe where you come
exactly.
From, such things happen. Yeah. Correct. And that would be correct, the point of the shot where the Medrash will go and embellish it. Let's look at the way, again, the number of different Midrashim that speak about it. Let's look at the way that it's mentioned in the Psikta in source number 10. The Hebrew Hileah. Mitoch ha-simanim shemasar Yaakov l'Rachel al ha-be'er. Now that's really interesting, because it takes the simanim, because he gave her simanim, but according to this, he gave her simanim all the way back by the be'er, which means that from the very beginning, he knew that he... Right, all the way back at the well, he gave the simanim, that he already knew from the beginning that cannot be trusted. Rachel masartim l'Leah. Which, by the way, now adds Leah, now adds Rachel into the story as well, which is something which is picked up and embellished in other midrashim. Al zelo hikir Yaakov avinu l'fichach hoyu b'nei Rachel tsnuim ba'al esod. which is fascinating. Now this turns this into a positive quality, what Rachel did, and therefore we find among Rachel's children this ability to keep a secret, Halo Tirei LeYosef Shelo Higid LaAviv Mechirato, which is interesting because one of the things that you know we wonder about, the Ramban is the one who articulates the question, why is it that over the years Yaakov, Yosef had the ability, he was a king of Egypt, he was in charge, why does he never send any information to his father about what's going on? He says, no, Yosef felt this was a secret that needed to be kept, and Yosef kept this as a secret. Also later on the question comes up if Yaakov ever knew, but it sounds like Yosef would not, for this Midrash it sounds like, I'm not going to say 100%, but it sounds like Yosef was not the one who would ever reveal this secret. We later find on with others, there's also the Shaul, which I'll skip, and Esther, Ein Esther Magedet Moladeta. She also is from, presumably from the tribe of Binyamin, which is from Rachel, because Mordechai is her cousin, and Mordechai is described, right, cousin, not uncle, is described as Ish Yimini, somebody from Binyamin, so therefore she also knows how to keep a secret. Vayomer Yaakov Lavan, Mazot Asita Li, Halo Rachel Avadati, Imcha Valama Rimitani. So here Yaakov has this conversation with Lavan. Why did you do this? Amar lo, amarti achi aviha, ani achiv. One second. Amarti achi aviha, ani achiv, ani b'ramaut, aval rimatani. What this means is that I am her brother in terms of ramaut. You know what? I'm going to skip this here, and I think it'll become a little clearer the way it's said in the next source. Next source builds up the whole scene a little bit more, and actually makes Lavan sound even worse than we have thought till now. Those of you who need the English, you'll have the English on the next page if you need to follow that. Yosef Lavan et kol anshei makom. Lavan gathers all the people of the city. Vayas mishte, and he makes a party. And he gathers all the people, Amar lahem, and he says to them, Yod'im atem, just one second. Right, he says to them, Yod'im atem, shayinu dechokim lamayim. You know how difficult the water situation was. The cave in Shabbat had Tzadik Hazelakan Nitbarchu Hamayim. And once Yaakov came here, which is again taking the situation of Yaakov lifting the rock off of the well and saying, well, so now this has continually happened that Yaakov unveils the water source. Now, what is Lavan doing over here? Well, what is the Midrash doing, first of all? Okay. The Midrash is giving us more motivation. I mean, you have to ask yourself a question at some point, why is Lavan doing this? You know, okay, to say Lavan's a creep and creeps like to do creepy things, that's very easy. But what ultimately is his motivation? So over here it's saying is that he said something, well, look how much our situation has improved ever since Yaakov has gotten here. Amrin le uma hanilach. And they said, yeah, but what are we going to gain from all this? Amr lahon iba ayin atun unmurami be yavle leya duhu rachim lada rachel. I'll translate. If you want, I'll lie to him, and I will give him Leah because he loves Rachel a lot. And if that's the case, what's going to happen? And then he's going to end up working here for another 7 years. Amrin Leah, they say to him, Aved ma dahani lach. Do what's good for you. Amar Lahun, he then says to them, again trying to imply that you're going to gain from this as well, Havu li mashkon, I want every one of you to give me some money now, so that I know, Delet chad min chon, mefarsem v'yavun le mashkon, v'alzo v'ayte le in chamor. He says, give me money so that I then have assurance that you're not going to reveal what's going on to Yaakov. Now, how he fools them all into giving him money is interesting. What does he then do with the money? He goes and he buys with it, Chama Masha Fakufar, he goes, buys with it, Yain v'shemen v'basar. He goes and he buys all the food for the meal. So basically, he fooled all the townspeople into paying for the wedding. And Havu Lama Nikrishmo Lavan Ha'arami, and that's why he's called Lavan the Arami. He lives in Aram. Everybody who lives in Aram should be an Arami. Why is he called Lavan Arami? Shirima Ba'anshe Makomo. Because he even, considering that all the people maybe were somewhat dishonest, he was the worst one of all of them. V'kula Yoma Havim Michalalinbe. And during the entire party, all the local people who were by the party, they were praising Yaakov, they came into Ol Baramsha, and as the evening came, and they're still making, singing and dancing, whatever, they're praising him, Amar Lahun Mahu Kedain. Why is so much of it? Amar Lei, Ad Kamat Chesed Bizchutecha, V'yi Mekalsin Kodmai. That because of you, we've had all of this water and so on, we've had all of this so on, and that's why they are praising you so much. And but the people now who already apparently were a little bit tired of Lavan's, again, they were afraid because they won't get their money back, but they were dancing there, and they would say, Ha Laya, Ha Laya, He Laya, He Laya. Which means they already were dancing and I don't know, how the Arab women make sounds? Or actually the Moroccan women make sounds as well. Right? I don't know if any of you can do this. What? So that's, you can't do this, but you know the sound. That's the impression what they were doing and saying, but the sound they were making was Hi Leia, Hi Leia. And she's Leia. Biramsha atun ma'alata, as the evening came, the shushvanim came, lachnisa kala, v'chafon butznia, they covered up the candles. Amr lahen, Yaakov says, Mahu Kadein. He says, what are you doing? Why are you putting out the candles? Again, you know why they're putting out the candles, so that he won't be able to see the difference. Amrilei, Ma'at Saber, Da'anan Dichrin de Kavatchon. He goes, what do you think, that we're as bad as you? Now this, some of the commentaries on the Midrash say, they're referring back to Yaakov's, quote-unquote, lack of tzniut. Where do you see Yaakov's lack of tzniut? That he kisses her out in public, by the well, when he first meets her. So they say, what, you think we're like you? And therefore, by the way, it's interesting in terms of the Radak that we saw before, that Yaakov insisted on putting out the lights, and Yaakov insisted on not speaking to her, and he says, no, this was part of Lavan's plan, was to put out lights. And look at that, and the whole night he was talking to her, and he would say, Rachel, v'hi anyale, and she responded to him. So therefore, that whole thing that the Radak was telling us is just not here, in this Midrash at least. Vitzafra in the morning, vihinehi Leah, she was Leah. Amr Lai says, Mara Maita Bat Rama. Lav Belaila Hava Karina Rachel, Va'atanitli. And he calls her a deceiver, the daughter of a deceiver, and all night I was calling you, Rachel, and you responded. And she says, Eat Safar de Late Talmidim. Is there somebody, Safar is actually a barber. Don't ask me why barber's brought up. Is there a barber who doesn't have an apprentice? So basically she's saying, I learned this from you. Lo kach hayat savach lachavuch, Esav, va'at anele. And when your father called out Esav, you didn't answer. So over here, it's, again, we saw one midrash that puts the words in Lavan's mouth, and over here we see the words are put in Leah's mouth. And again, you just have to ask yourself a question, and what this would have done to the relationship. So, let's... As far as the simanim go, as I said, one of the commentaries says, the Chemdet HaYamim says, that the simanim were to simply come into the room and say tahara ani. That was the siman. I saw another interpretation say that he gave her a special necklace and that he'd given over. Another one says that it was a phrase to say mila v'tfila siman liYisrael, and another one says that it was some kind of a combination of the earlobe, the big thumb, and the toe, which has to do with what makes a Kohen become a Kohen when they would put the blood on this, and that was the siman. You can choose which anyone you like. There is one other opinion, which we'll see right now. It's in source number 13, that's the Kenyan Bali Atosaf, and Hiba Bokir, Shekola Laila Haita Osa Atzmaki Rachel, Mitocha Shlosha Simanim Shemasrala, Nida Vachala Vadlakat Aner. So of course these are the three mitzvot which are mitzvot on a woman, so therefore presumably Yaakov knew the Mishnah in Shabbat, and therefore Yaakov knew to share that these were the mitzvot the Jewish women need to know, and that's what Yaakov said to Leah. Okay, which again goes back to the point that if those are the simanim, then they did speak, right? If the simanim are verbal simanim, that means that they did speak, and then you're back to this point about the voices. But then, as I said, the voices most likely was not a concern, because they would have been similar. Source 14 puts a little bit more intrigue into the whole relationship. Lama haita snua. Why was Leah hated? Lo shahaita ke'orami Rachel. She was not uglier than Rachel. Ela shahaita yafa ki Rachel. She was just as beautiful as Rachel. Again, that we know to the pasuk all the way back in the beginning. Shenemar l'Lavan shnei banot shavot benoi uviyofi uvizkifa. They were the same. They were similar. They had two daughters. They were similar in every way. Lo ma amar ve'eni le'a rakot. Why does it say that her eyes were soft? Elokivin sheyolda Rivka Esav v'Yaakov. When Rivka gave birth to Esav v'Yaakov, noldu Lavan shnei banot Leah v'Rachel, which implies that they're also twins, by the way. Shulchu igrot elu la'elu. They sent letters back and forth. V'hitnu b'nehem, and they made shiduchim already at a very early stage. Kidei sheyitlu Esav et Leah v'Yaakov Rachel, and then this was already set at an early stage. Leah asked, what about Esav? And she heard how badly he behaved. And she would cry all the time because of this Rasha that she would need to marry. And that's where eyes were soft, which means to say that it was not something which she was born with, but something which develops. Now continue on the top of page 4 in this midrash. Amar Yaakov, Yaakov's concern about all this was, Bishvil habrachot haya mevakesh lahargeni, that because of the brachot, he wanted to kill me. Ukishe etol et lea ishto, miyodeya imyaniya umyaniya kumachlat ba Yishmael, biyavoy lai viomer li, lo dayach, the Yaakov was terrified. He's saying, it's not enough that Esav is going to come, and he's going to say, it's not enough that you took the birthright, it's not enough that you took the blessings from me, now you're taking my wife as well, the woman that I'm engaged to. So,
Esav
was married lots of times already.
And he got married to...
He got married to Chittite women, and then he got married again. Didn't get rid of the first wives. No, we're going to... Yeah?
So does this imply, like, Yaakov wasn't ever meant to have more than one wife? Like, it's not even the way the women
right.
even perceived it.
Right. Correct.
It's like a diabetic kind of thing that happened.
Correct. But let's look at Source 15. Source 15, I actually found... A number of people said it. As far as I could tell, this was the first one, although it could be that there's others before, but I did find a number afterwards. I was thinking about this. This was actually exact. I mean, in a sense, it'll take us back to the Beis Halevi, but it's a little different because it's a longer cheshbon involved. But it strikes me nonetheless as ringing true. It's found over here in a source called Avodat Yisrael, which is written by Rav Yisrael, who's better known as the Maggid of Koznitz. He died in 1814, which means he wrote this some point before this. Over here we have a source which is a good couple hundred years old. Right, the midrash that we saw, and where he accuses her of being a Ramait, and so on. Let's go where it's underlined. And he says, "Ve'efshar kipshuto." Perhaps we can explain this in the simplest possible way. Kevin shekanah bechora, when Yaakov acquires the bechora, nichlal chelak Esav bekirbo, he now has acquired a part of Esav within him. V'amar emet kashahu anochi Esav bechorcha mamash. And therefore, when Yaakov says to Yitzchak, "I am Esav, your firstborn," it's true. You say, hold a second. How can that be true? Because he's saying, because he bought from Esav the being the firstborn. So therefore, the elements of Esav's life, that he was the firstborn, when Yaakov stands in front of Yitzchak, he says, "I am Esav, your firstborn, because I've acquired this." You know, fair and square. That's who, meaning I am standing here truthfully saying that I am Esav, your firstborn. Which again, there really is a moral question over here. How could it possibly be that Yaakov would go and lie to his father? So over here, he's really trying to claim that it's not a lie over here, that there is certainly, let's call it this way, at least an element of truth within it. That's what he seems to be saying. Vinei adua, ki kol yirata shaleya haita, kevod amur inshe hagdolo ligadol vaktana lekatan. And therefore the problem was that Leah was supposed to marry the older son. Avamikevod amur Yaakov, anochi Esav bechorecha. Once Yaakov says to Yitzchak, "I am Esav, your firstborn," be'emet ki nechlal Esav ima b'chorah b'kirbo, because now he really has acquired elements of Esav being the b'chor, im kein Leah chelko min hashamayim, which means at that moment, now Leah, this goes back to your point now, at that point, Leah now becomes his rightful wife as well, which means that when Yaakov acquires the b'chorah, he is acquiring an element of Esav life, and he's now going to have to live through Esav's life as well, including marrying the woman that Esav was supposed to marry. And now Yaakov, at this point, will end up having a dual wife. He goes, and that's her intention. She wasn't trying to have chutzpah to say, "I learned this from you." She's saying, "Didn't you say to your father you were Esav? So if you were Esav, al kein ani chelkech." I'm part of your inheritance. And therefore, I am your proper wife. So I said, this is, again, very, very clever. I thought of this myself. As I said, you always need to find a dead rabbi who said it first in order for it to have any kind of authenticity.
Why was Leah
hated? Excuse me?
Why was Leah hated?
Why is Leah hated? Who said she was hated? I know. Who said she was hated?
She said she was hated.
Right. It never says that Yaakov hated her. It says that she felt hated.
Well, she was loved less than
right? Yeah, she... Let me... That's a very important question. Look in the... Chumash, if you have it. I think the way the Torah writes it is very instructive.
She feels hated
because she knows right after they get married that he didn't really want her. She knows that he loves her sister. Okay, let's look where it is. Right, in Perek Kaf Tet Pasuk Kaf, Vayavod Yaakov Rachel Sheva Shanim Vayubeinav Kiyamim Achadim Avatavata Vayom Yaakov, one second, a little later. Sorry, look back in the first source, we have it there. Pasukav Tet. Vayitin lavan l'Rachel bito bilhashi v'dolo avushka v'yavo gam el Rachel v'yehav gam et Rachel mi'Leah. He loved Rachel more than Leah. Does it say he hated Leah? What does it say? He liked Rachel more than he liked Leah. That's pshat. based on the pshat over here, would you say he loved Rachel and he loved Leah? Yes. But what does it say? Read it again. Read it again. Ve'yahav gam et Rachel mi Leah, ve'yavodim ha'ot sheva shenim acherot, ve'yar Hashem ki snu'a Leah. Ve'yavtachet rachma v'rachel akara. That Leah, God, he sees that Leah is hated. That Leah is hated is not necessarily that Yaakov hates her, that she is something, that she feels hated, because it says right before that Yaakov loves her. But again, if you're married to somebody and he loves someone else more, that may not be good enough that he loves you, but that is considered to be, in relative terms, that would feel like being hated.
But the narrator.
Yes.
So
yes.
Where's the narrator?
The narrator is saying in terms of how she feels. Okay, let's get to a couple last things which I wanted to see how many of them we can get to. The question which still hovers over us is, why was it necessary for Klal Yisrael to develop like this? That's really the question that comes. Go back to source 16, because I do want to go back a bit to motivation. Here we have when the Eved comes looking for Rivka, and Rivka achu shmo Lavan, v'yaretz Lavan ela ish, right, perikav dalet, pasikav tet, hachutza ela ayin, and Lavan comes running out. So here we have, we're meeting Rachel for the first time, we're meeting Lavan for the first time, v'yikirot et anezev et hatzmidim ayidei achoto, and he sees the jewelry, v'kishmo devrei Rivka, and he hears what it says, achoto lemar kodi bera ish, and so on. Then suddenly, Lavan becomes very, very hospitable. But it says very clearly, he sees the jewelry. So that already should tell you something about Lavan. Lavan's interested in into it for the money. Lavan is somebody who likes money, which is really what the Midrash is telling us before, how he takes money from all the townspeople. He's willing to rip off everybody for money. Which means if I go back and ask what Lavan's motivation is, again, on a simple level, he got a guy to work for him for 7 years.
Greed.
Yeah, it's greed. If you look at source 17, it's also interesting in terms of the language. Right, and then Vayoma Achiha Viima Te Sheva Nara Itanu Yamim O Asur Acher Telech. Let her stay a little bit. So you have to ask her, what does Yamim mean? Again, we now later on know that when Lavan says Yamim, Yamim may not exactly mean Yamim. Yamim or Asur is generally understood as it could be a year, it could be months, and so on. But it's also interesting that Rivka speaks the exact same way. When Rivka sends Yaakov away, source 18, Perakov Zayin, Pasuk Mem Gimel, Va'ata b'nishma b'koli v'kum b'rach l'cha el Lavan achicha rana. I want you to go to my brother Lavan, which is interesting. Specifically, go to Lavan, my brother. He's the one who I want you to go to. And she knows exactly who Lavan is. V'yashafti imo yamim achadim. Now, again, what does she say? Stay there a couple of days. What does yamim achadim mean? Or is this, again, this exaggeration? Adashuv tashuv chamat achichav. So your brother calms down. Yeah. Love. Do you imagine that Esav, after the weekend, will calm down? Or would it perhaps be a little more time? Adshuv af achichav imcha v'shachach et asher asita lova shalachti. I'll send for you v'lakachticha misham. Why should we lose you both in one day? So it's very interesting that this language, this turn of phrase, this language which is used, you know, days for years and so on, seems Lavan and his mother speaks this way. Rivka speaks this way. This seems to be a whole family trait. And apparently, Rivka thinks it's important for Yaakov to go there. And not just to escape, because to escape, you can escape to all kinds of places, right? I mean, there's two things. One is to get away from here, two is to go someplace else. She seems to think that it's an important thing to do. Now, one is, I can say very, very simply, that if every single Jew was completely tamim, and that's what we're told about Yaakov initially, right? He's ish tam, yeshev ohalim. If every single Jew was tamim, it could be that we would have a better Jewish community, but it could be that we've had a very hard time getting on in the world. I mean, you can't help but appreciate, and I say this so far, in Bezrat Hashem, in terms of the current struggles that we're having with our Arab brethren, cousins, as it were, that you do have to be impressed that so far there is this incredible psychological warfare which is going on. I don't know how much you paid attention to this, where where what Israel did is that Netanyahu and Barak went up north, and Benny Begin got on the radio saying, "No, we're not. You know, nothing's going to happen." And then they come in and attack. So that's not tmimut. That was acting in a clever way. And the advice that I would give you right now, as this skirmish is taking place, is the worst thing you can do is to listen to the radio or watch the television or watch the news. It's the worst thing you can do. There's nothing productive going to come out of it. And most of what's being said is misinformation coming on both sides. So what do you think you can get from it other than getting yourselves upset? But this ability of giving it misinformation, this ability of saying that, you know, yes, there's going to be a ceasefire, there won't be a ceasefire, we will go in, we're not going to go in. It's interesting. And listen, I know that that there are elements about this that are very, that cause anxiety. As I said, the more that one gets involved with it, the worse that it can be. And believe me, I have two sons who are right now by the border who were called up. And it's also interesting because you look at things differently when it's just general soldiers rather than being your sons, and suddenly how do I handle it? I drink a lot. Yeah. You can't just listen to the news. Yeah.
Getting back to the perspective there. Now I have a very close relative who's really taken Brachus and thrown it back to me and said, "No, forget it. This is just a dysfunctional religion because of the relationships that we're being presented with. It doesn't make any sense."
So tell your dysfunctional relative that the Maharal, when he looked at Sefer Bereshit, mm-hmm. said that this is absolute proof that it's divine and written by God. Because either an anti-Semite wrote this or God wrote this. If we were writing about our heroes, our ancestors, there is no way in the world we would have written such things. That means that this should comfort them and know that absolutely this is the word of God and this is what's happened. And yes, we all have dysfunctional relationships as much as we want to make believe on the outside that we don't necessarily have.
But,
what?
It wasn't written by
Art Scroll. It wasn't written by Art Scroll. We don't say anything negative about Art Scroll. Okay.
Ron Weinberger in the LDH coverage yeah. goes around and says essentially that, you know, this is a narrative that, you know,
Rabbi Weinberg, he was my chavrusa, a long couple of years ago. Anyway, I do want to share one thing with you, which I found absolutely amazing. It's a little bit disconnected from everything I've said so far today, unless you want to somehow connect it in. We'll see how skillful I am if I can connect it. But it goes back to the motivation about why this was necessary. And it really comes down to what Rivka was thinking, because it all starts with Rivka. And again, remember, Rivka's got a little bit of Lomim in her. Rivka's got a little. Again, they come from the same mother. They come from the same father. They speak the same way. I mean, it could be that Yitzchak is innocent, right? It could be Yaakov is innocent. Rivka wasn't. I mean, Rivka's working behind the scenes the whole time. Rivka knows what she's doing.
Right? So she's taking it upon her responsibility.
Rivka knows. I'm saying Rivka knows what she's doing. I mean, yeah. You do have. You can't read these two parashiyot without realizing that Rivka knows exactly what she's doing. And Yaakov's going to come out of this a lot stronger and very, I mean, as we see in the whole second part of the parasha, Yaakov's going to come out of all this finding elements within his personality he didn't have before. But as far as the motivation for this, I found something in the Netziv, which in my mind is absolutely amazing. And again, just to understand context, the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva of Volozhin. In Volozhin, it's not that the most important thing was learning Torah. The only important thing was learning Torah. In Volozhin, they had somebody learning 24/7, 365 days a year. They felt that if someone stops learning in Volozhin, the world may stop to exist. When Yom Kippur was over, people wanted to break their fast, there were still people sitting and learning, and they just took turns learning in order to make sure there was always somebody learning in the yeshiva. So again, here is a man who thinks learning is the most important thing. Here's a man who lives during the Haskalah, when the hated non-religious, there's a war going on between them. I saw Rav Lichtenstein was quoted last week as saying that sometimes people say their kids going off the derech and so on, and we get all carried away today how bad things are. He said the percentage of people who went off the derech in Volozhin was far higher than in Gush. That was the reality. Again, there was a war going on in terms of, and the Skala was winning. So listen to what he says, and I cut this short, and I took two different places that he says this, so let's take a look. Source 19. This is the Netziv, the Emek Dever, Kav Zayin Aleph. It's in something called the Harchev Davar, which is the bottom of the page in really small print. He goes, you can't read the Parsha from last week without realizing at the very end of the Parsha, Yaakov is going to get the real bracha from Yitzchak. At the very end, he gives him Birchot Avraham, right? He gives him the bracha of Avraham at the end of the Parsha. That was not what he was doing, and that's the bracha for Torah and Vavodah. Aval ha'oseg milut chasadim mitzad tivo odat enoshi sheru'i lasot kein ein lezeh schar b'olam haba v'hanagah ruchanit. Now, let me explain a little bit because I cut out a lot over here just so that it would fit on the page so we wouldn't have more than four pages. Here's the background. It says that for the first 26 generations, the world existed on chesed. 26 generations, 10 generations of Avram to Noach, 10 generations from Noach, sorry, from Adam to Noach, 10 generations from Noach to Avram, and 6 generations to Moshe. The 26th generation is when Matan Torah takes place. 26 is Yud Hei Vav Hei. The world exists before the Torah based on Chesed. God's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, is the name of Chesed, so therefore, presumably, the Chesed that the world exists on is the Chesed of God. Easy? Easy. That's the normative interpretation that I just now told you. Too fast?
Yes.
The Netziv says no. The world before Matan Torah existed based on chesed of people. And therefore, a city that doesn't perform chesed will be destroyed, and that's why Sodom is destroyed. A community that doesn't have chesed, a flood is going to come. Which means, even though there's no Torah, and even though there's no Avodah, chesed is what Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world exists upon chesed. But that chesed could have been chesed, which was done by atheists, by idolaters, by people who are disconnected from God. And God will reward those people in Olam Hazeh for the chesed that they do. Olam Haba is something else. Olam Haba, according to the Netziv, is saying you need to do a mitzvah or have a connection with God. But in Olam Hazeh, one gets reward for good things that they do, and that is how the world exists on chesed. The Netziv then claims that this is only true for non-Jews, and that for Jews, the way it was supposed to work is that Jews who have and were makabel the Torah would only get schar for chesed if I did it because God commanded me to do it. Not because I'm a nice person, not because I have good manners, not because it's my nature, but only if it's a tzivui. And he says, what Rivka had Yaakov steal, and then, by the way, Netziv then says, therefore Yitzchak says to Esav, come do a nice deed for me, come bring me food, come do chesed. And there, I'll give you the bracha. The bracha will be a bracha for Olam Hazeh. So he explains the whole motivation over here is that Esav is really not going to be considered part of the Jewish people because the Brichot Avraham goes to Yaakov at the end of the Parsha. So which bracha is he giving? A bracha of power, a bracha of Gashmiot, a bracha of this world, Olam Hazeh. He's giving him Olam Hazeh. Even things done for ulterior motives, even things done because you want to get a bracha, even though things which are done because you don't necessarily connect to God. That's what Rivka said to Yaakov to steal. But listen to what she says. Let's read inside. Alkein matzelis chutet Esav mitzvot kibara ve'aim kemoshi ira liyefet. And he goes a little back by Yefet. He explained this as well. V'yineh oto b'seuda uvavur ze agilo abrachot b'shashi yichaven atzmo l'kabel shefa ruach hakodesh l'varech. Uvasher inu ra'ui l'asel tuda b'yom umavet. Alkein matzel l'akdim anyan avarifka mehavata liyakov hishtadla asher harishaim Shiatsu Miyakov Sheyusu Chesed. That she was concerned about the Jews who will not be religious, the Jews who do not Shomer Torah of Mitzvot, but when they do good deeds that they should get rewarded in this world. But by the way, do you begin to understand what he's saying over here? He's claiming that Yaakov endangered himself, and Rivka had Yaakov endangered because Esav could have killed him for this, and Esav's going to hate him and going to want to kill him for the next who knows how many years. All because of the descendants of Yaakov, who will not necessarily be religious, that Yaakov Avinu is Moser Nefesh, not for the Ruchaniyut, not for the spirituality of those descendants, but that they can have physical things. What he's saying is, I'll say it in today's terms, that religious Jews, Bachurei Yeshiva, Talmidei Chachamim, Shibi Moser Nefesh, for the gashmiyud of non-religious Jews. That's what the Nitziv is saying over here. Now you read this, and as I said, it's worthwhile looking it up in the book and seeing his whole, because it's a long piece. It's unbelievable that he says this. But what I think what it comes down to is that Am Yisrael could have been a place which only had room for somebody who was the intellectual, spiritual elite, and everybody else gets pushed by the side. And what the Nitziv, the Rosh Yeshiva Balazhin, is saying, that it's important that other Jews also are taken care of. And therefore, this idea of Am Yisrael being created through this Rama'ut, how do you say Rama'ut, deception, through these other elements, which we look at it, and therefore her relative can come and say, how can this be part of the Jewish people? Well, bottom line is, it is a part of the Jewish people. And we have within our larger camp people who are not necessarily the most honest people, not the best people. So what's the choice? Do we kick them out of the camp and say, no, you were absolutely part of our people as well. You believe in God, you don't believe in God. To the extent that the Nitziv is saying that we need to be moser nefesh for the gashmiut of the non-religious Jew. You know, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter once said that the anderer's gashmius is your ruchnius. Right. The other person's gashmiut is your ruchniut. For you to worry for somebody else's gashmiut is your spirituality. It could be that that's part of what the Nitziv is referring to over here, but what does it really break down to? It really comes down to an incredible statement of Am Yisrael, that we are concerned for all of Klal Yisrael, and not all of Klal Yisrael necessarily is Shomer Mitzvot. But we still need to take responsibility for them as well. And not just in terms of their religious thing. It's not just when the non-religious Jew comes into the shul because he's making a bar mitzvah. Oh, so now I care about him. No. That we care about non-religious Jews in other areas as well. In terms of what food are they eating. That I'm saying, that's a very important element over here. But what he's saying is that had it not been for this, it could have been that we would have rejected all deviant behavior and said, that's not part of our community. So he says, no, it was important on a deep level that the Jewish community have that in its very creation of it. And Rivka was saying, this is also needs to be part of who we are. And this all comes back from Rivka. And therefore, you have the relationship between Yaakov and Yitzchak being the way that it is, that he has to steal the brachot. And we have the relationship between Yaakov and Leah, that it all becomes done surreptitiously. Because not everything in this world is going to be this fairy tale romance. Yaakov and Rachel love each other, they marry, and everything is perfect. The imperfection also needs to be a part of the Jewish people. I just want to end off and say...
I understand the point you were making.
Because it's very difficult. It's very difficult.
I don't understand.
No, you did understand. You did understand. You just don't like it.
Well, let me repeat. Okay? And tell me if I was right, if I understood you correctly. What you're saying is that the spirituality of Am Yisrael, and for the people who are not connected to Am Yisrael, but they only worry about the stock market and Obama, they worry for Obama, those people are part of us, regardless of what they do, and our spirituality showered them with all the goodies.
So what he says is that when the person who is non-religious does chesed, does a good deed,
And
they should be rewarded for them. According to...
Do they get Olam
One second. No, he's not talking about Olam Abba, he's talking about Olam Hazeh. He's saying according to the way the world should have worked, Jews who receive the Torah should only be rewarded when they do a mitzvah. A mitzvah means that you accept that God commanded you to do it. You're doing it because it's a nice deed, you should not get any reward for it. He's saying over here is that Yaakov's Mesirut Nefesh of going in to take the bracha from Yitzchak is in order to assure that Jews who are non-religious, who do good deeds, should be rewarded for every single good deed that they do.
Well, that's the question. What is it, to give us the wherewithal to assist? I mean,
how does the bracha really do that?
It's a bracha for gashmiut. So,
correct.
So that doesn't give us the
he's nobody's saying that non-religious Jews should be rewarded for good that they do. Kiruv is also important. He's just not talking about it over here. But again, I want to bring up a different point, and then I know it's disturbing. It's okay. It's good. It's a very important point that makes over here. It's a very important point that he said. But I want to make an observation, and then we'll stop for today, and then I'll upset you next week again. The observation is that today, again, literally today, we have 30,000 soldiers, more or less, who are right by Gaza. Right.
I heard 75,000.
They approved up to 80,000. Doesn't mean that all of them have been drafted yet. It doesn't mean that all of them have gone down yet. So and so on. Even among the 30,000, I don't know exactly how many they've actually brought down there. But there is a great deal right now. Some of those, many of those, are non-religious Jews. Some of them are atheists completely. They are being moser nefesh for Klal Yisrael. That's the bottom line. On the other hand, a lot of them are absolutely religious Jews. And the heroism and the bravery, it's impressive. Again, I know kids that weren't called up and said who just let out of the army. And they let their parents know. I called my officer. I volunteered. I'm going back. Their parents are looking like they're out of your minds. Every parent, what are you talking about? And these kids are saying, what are you talking about? This is what we have to do. That the Nitziv feels this sense of Klal Yisrael, it would have been so easy for us. It would have been so easy, again, for Rosh Yeshiva Lushin to get up and tell his students, these, by the way, were the shirim that he gave in the yeshiva. It would have been so easy for him to say, Talmidim, the only thing important is if you learn Torah. Everything else is not important. And he is giving them the opposite message. He's saying, you have to be Moser Nefesh for the non-religious Jew, that he should have Gashmius as well. If he's decent, he gives charity, he does something which is good, he should be rewarded for it. And Yaakov is making sure that this happens. And this is what Rivka's thinking. Why? Because Rivka, who comes from the family of love and from Betuel, and her nameless mother over here, who also speaks this way, she comes and she says, you know what, this is who the Jewish people are going to be. They need other skills. It's not only the one who sits in the tent. She ultimately is the one who drags Yaakov out of the tent, ruins his life completely. He'll have to marry Leah. His life gets so complicated. That's what it became. He had a very simple life. And look how complicated Yaakov's life becomes. And it's all Rivka there in the background. Because ultimately, Klal Yisrael is going to be something which is bigger. And then the question comes, do we kick out those that are different? Or do we say, no, I'm concerned about those who are different as well? And I'm saying, when you keep in mind the reality that we live in today, those that are different are moser nefesh for us. What the least that we can do is that we're moser nefesh for them as well.
This could not have been a correct word. But it's a nice one. I like it. I'm not against that one.